Hey, welcome to Big Jim's Garage. I'm your host, Big Jim O'Brien. Watched way too much between Formula One and the NASCAR race at Indy. Matt Yoakum, man, I had gears spinning around in my head all day yesterday and trying to watch football too. Too much going on, dude.
I think it's one of those weekends where it's just extreme overload, which makes for a really slow Monday, but boy, it sure made for a fun Sunday.
Isn't it cool that you think, by the way, our guest, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Matt Yoakum, thank you so much for joining us, bud.
Hey, my pleasure as always, man.
It's interesting to me that in a lot of the disciplines in racing, the three main ones would be, you talk about NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, at least for an American perspective, and I kind of put them in rank. We're seeing the young guys stick their nose in there in NASCAR. We're seeing the young guys stick their nose definitely in IndyCar. And then I'm watching this guy for Ferrari, Charles Leclerc, just make Sebastian Vettel the number two driver for Ferrari in half a season.
To me, I think it's a great, if you go through the history of racing, it's always a great transition from the guys that are the top heroes of the day to the future that starts to stake their claim. And you've seen it, you know, when Dale Earnhardt came around, you know, in 78, 79, 80, and he won the Rookie of the Year and then won the championship, and how he served notice to David Pearson, to Richard Petty, Bobby Allison, that he was going to be the guy in the future. And you've seen it so many times, it doesn't matter what discipline, but I think it really brings a lot of excitement because at the end of the day, it's a lot like when you watch Major League, the movie. And, you know, you've got the guy who's the catcher. Can't remember what his name is. Great actor.
Yep.
And he's at the end of his career. You know, the knees are going bad. But he still steps it up. And he steps it up. And it really provides that last period for his career. You know, same thing with Kevin Costner. You know, the same deal as well when he was in Bull Durham.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you see that in racing, and that brings a lot of excitement. It doesn't matter if you're racing out at Michigan International Speedway or if you're running down at Flat Rock or Owosso or Butler Motor Speedway. You know, you see the same thing. Kids come in, and they push the old guys.
And it was interesting yesterday. First of all, it was a great race. It was fun to watch yesterday. I mean, it was crazy, but it was fun to watch. But what got lost in the shuffle was Kevin Harvick's dominance. He was gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just, even like at the final restart, you're like, oh, they got something for him. No, they really didn't. I mean, the whole race seemed to be he had whatever that little oomph is that everybody wishes they had.
It's all about, I think, peaking at the right time. And we've really overused that phrase so often. But I think when it comes to Indy, and Indy's one of those crown jewel races where you can throw out what all the other storylines are. That race means something special. No matter if there's 300,000 there in the stands or 30 or however many there really were, the bottom line is that is a special race that you want to win.
So
for Harvick, being a kid growing up in Bakersfield, and your hero is Rick Mears, and you meet your hero when you're 7 or 8 years old, and he signs a picture that says, "Hey, to Kevin, hope to someday see you at Indy," or something like that. And not only do you win it once, but then, you know, because I was there when he won it in 2003. And, man, to think you win it in 2003. And this is the one great thing about sport in general. And it doesn't matter if it's stick and ball or racing. No one gives you a script. Nobody's Nostradamus. You can't go, hey, you know what? This is going to be my week, so I'm going to soak it all in. Jamie Murray told me, when he won the Daytona 500 in 2010, he so wishes that he had known he was going to win it, because then he could have taken in every moment leading up to it, during it, and after it, and soaked it in, because you never know when that moment will ever happen again, unless you're Tom Brady, who wins about the Super Bowl every other year.
Yeah, but Dan Marino.
For Kevin Harvick, Kevin Harvick to sit there and say, okay, you know, 15 years later, 16 years later, I'm going to win that race again. You know, and I think if you look at, you know, Bubba Wallace, oh my gosh. I mean, we've talked about him so many times on your show, Jim, and to see the run that he finally was able to put together, because they're starting to get the right financing. They're starting to get their program set forth. And I look for good things for them in 2020.
But was yesterday a lot of the accidents and stuff? I mean, you saw guys that definitely guys were getting pinched. I mean, you know, if you were on the bottom, you were going to get pinched. They were going to come down because they had to get that line. Was that a function of the new package or the mentality of the drivers, the old, new, and the fact that you're racing for that last place in the playoffs?
I think it was really a collection of different storylines all colliding at the same point. You know, you've got guys that are trying to lock themselves into the playoffs. You've got guys that are trying to win the Brickyard 400. And then you've got this new package, which I think has been fantastic, and especially comes alive at night. It just seems like cooler temperatures or racing at night. This package is freaking unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, it's so exciting. And I think you're going to see that again at Las Vegas this coming week. But I think that it has changed how you race. And there's no longer of, well, you know, I'll run in fifth for a while, and then the last, you know, third of the race, you don't have that time to step it up. And you saw it at the Brickyard. You know, lap after lap, somebody, you know, has a hiccup off turn two, and, man, it cost them, you know, 10 car lengths. And I think it's made these guys, you know, I don't think that they ever have not earned their money, but, boy, they are sure having to step up to earn their money now.
Yeah, because we used to talk about, like, you know, used to be like, with the old package, you'd have guys riding around stage racing. I mean, you know, like, okay, just get to the finish. But now, you're right. You give up 5-6 spots. The days of just like, well, I'll make it up in a pit thing, or, you know, during a competition caution or at the end of a stage. You don't have that luxury. You're right. You're absolutely right, Matt. You don't have that luxury anymore.
I think if you also throw in the other factor of pit road before you, hey, you know what, my guys they'll knock off a great stop and we may gain 3 or 4 spots on pit road. Now you just hope you don't lose spots. And if somebody else does, you're going to gain, but you just want to come in. And Todd Gordon, Joey Logano's crew chief, told me a year ago, he goes, I just want my guys to come in and have a nice solid stop. Just don't lose me spots. I don't care about gaining, but just don't lose me spots. So we dig ourselves a hole that we've got to try to come back from even more. And I think you're seeing that pressure on those guys, especially how they've changed the pit rules over the past 2 years, you know, with that common air gun. So that's taken out of their hands of being used to their, you know, because those guys, I mean, you get off the airplane at the airport. If you come in on Sunday morning in the Race Day Express, the jack men, they're carrying their $700 carbon fiber jack handle. They're carrying their jacks. You know, the guys used to carry their impact guns with them. I mean, it was like their baby. You know, it's like, you know, Ted Baxter in you know, Caddyshack.
Yeah.
You know, the Billy Barul. Man, you got that special putter. You had that special impact gun that you practiced with all week. And that was your baby. Now you walk out to the pit box and like, all right, there it is. You know, and you fire it up a couple of times and you roll. And so there's just so much now. And with this package, I think it's provided so much change in how people race. To me, it's taken it back to the old days. And people keep saying, oh, you know, I love the racing in the old days. Well, here's the deal. You know, and Jim, you've been around so long, you've seen it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's the Detroit Tigers. You know, the 84 team is never going to be the same as the 2017.
Sure.
But you've got to change with the, you know, with the way things are changing. And I think racing now is the best I think I've ever seen it. And people may want to argue, but I'm like, every time I tune on, I sit and watch that race now this part of the year. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome.
Well, and there was a time, and to be, you know, I don't blame Rick Hendrick and Hendrick Racing for it, but they were the kings of the mile and a half. Just like you said, by the end of the year, they knew exactly what they were going to do during the playoffs. And Jimmy Johnson had the mile and a half tracks so dialed in that you felt like you were fighting for second place. And now with the new package and the younger drivers, it really feels like it's leveled the playing field. And we saw it yesterday with Jimmy. I mean, that accident, was that just him losing it, or was, I mean, that seems to be that razor's edge that we saw even again yesterday at Indy.
I think everybody is pedaling. I mean, you saw Kyle Larson spin out, Eric Jones from up in Byron, Michigan, you know, he was close quarters racing and the same thing. And I just think that these guys are so on the edge because they are having to pedal a race car that, you know, whereas before, you know, you might back it down a tenth or two of how hard you are pushing it. Now, I mean, you are all out. And whether you're a seven-time champion or, you know, you're Eric Jones who just won the Southern 500, you know, it doesn't matter. These guys are all digging. And I think one thing, you know, and I know we've talked about it in the past, and I saw on, you know, one of your podcasts there about Jimmy Johnson, should he go run the Indy 500 and different things. I think that Jimmy Johnson is going to be a lot like Tom Brady. People celebrate Tom Brady now, but in a way, not like they do a Roger Staubach or other people. But I think when he retires and walks away, then people are going to be like, oh, my God, Tom Brady, he was the best ever.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Johnson, I think, will fall into that same category where you don't appreciate him now and you're going to miss him when he's gone.
We love characters in sports. Terry Bradshaw was not a great quarterback during the regular season, and he'll be the first one to admit that. But they won the big games. And I've heard Lynn Swann joke about it. He goes, I would love to have a guy like Tom Brady throw me a ball that I didn't have to dive for. But because of this larger-than-life Bradshaw mentality and the four rings, he goes up in that, you know, that level, like you said. And Staubach being – Roger Staubach was Captain America. And, you know, Jimmy Johnson is right, absolutely. But he's kind of just Jimmy Johnson. And then I look at a guy – you know, Kyle Busch is the bad guy now. I mean, Kyle Busch, to me, is – he might as just wear black and put a cowboy hat on because people love it. I heard people cheering yesterday when his car grenaded.
Well, I think with Kyle Busch, it's almost like he feeds off of that negativity, being the guy who wears the black hat. You know, in pro wrestling, I think they call it the heel.
Yes.
He thrives off of that role. And I think it makes him better. It motivates him. And whereas with Jimmy Johnson, I think if you look at his place in the culture at Hendrick Motorsports, you had Jeff Gordon. And he was the leader of that team. And you could see when Dale Jr. went down and Jeff Gordon filled in, how Hendrick Motorsports stepped it back up in the productivity department, and Jimmy Johnson was able to capitalize and go ahead and win his seventh championship. And that sort of carried over until the spring of the following year, and then they really took a nosedive. And I feel like that Jimmy Johnson is a great driver. I felt like that it's just the way the culture was, he didn't have to be the leader. He could just be himself and focus on the 48, whereas Jeff Gordon was more of a leader of that team because he'd been there for 20 years.
So,
and
well, you're talking about like leaders, though. As I'm sitting here looking at the, you know, the top three guys for the playoffs in the Monster Energy Series are all Joe Gibbs. You got Kyle, Denny, and Truex. Right. And then you got Eric Jones in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know they're all on the same team, but I swear to God, if you ask 10 NASCAR fans, I bet you three of them wouldn't know they're all on the same team because they don't feel like that. I mean, I know they're obviously a cohesive unit and they work together and they win behind the scenes. But out front, you don't see that Kyle standing next to Denny. And then you look over and Martin's talking to Eric. Maybe as a fan, maybe you see it, Matt, but I don't. Is that just part of the mentality of those drivers and the way Joe runs it?
I think if you look at any team, the makeup is, hey, we're all one team, but the person that I want to beat most is you. And because Kyle Busch knows the equipment that Denny Hamlin has and Martin Truex and Eric Jones has, you know, and if you go over to Stuart Haas, it's the same deal. But I think if you look at, you know, through the years, just the success at multi-car teams, I always felt like Casey Kane was a great driver, but for whatever reason, he always excelled most when he was in a situation with a team that was, you know, like a two-car team, like Red Bull or Everham, where he was the lead driver. For whatever reason, when he was paired up with Jimmy Johnson and with Dale Jr. and with Jeff Gordon, for whatever reason, it just didn't seem to click. Now, if you go down to, you know, exit 23, which is the next exit down for me where Joe Gibbs Racing is located, I think if you look at Kyle Busch, you saw him walk into Victory Lane and hug and talk to Eric Jones after winning the Southern 500. And then he joked to me, he goes, yeah, he goes, I thought it was great. it was really cool seeing him win and win that race. Except the problem was he had to, you know, he beat me. And so he's, you know, on one hand, he's super thrilled because this is the guy that found Erik Jones in a sense at the Snowball Derby. When Erik Jones beat Kyle Busch, Kyle's like, oh, man, we've got to get this kid. This kid's special. But at the end of the day, you still want to beat everybody, especially your teammates.
So is Kyle I know he's the number one seed as far as the playoffs go. Is he the favorite going to Las Vegas next week?
I don't know I think this is where with the playoffs, you have to look at it in a certain way. Where when we had the old Chase, you say, all right, this is what we need to do, and this is how we need to go in with a game plan or whatever. It's almost like with the playoffs now, you have to approach it every single week. And if you have one bad week, oh, man, you're in, you know, double head grabber, you know, Dr. Phil crash mode because, you know, now you're in deep trouble. And I think if you look at Las Vegas, you have to go, all right, well, who's looked really good on the intermediate stuff? And I would say you'd have to look at, you know, the 14 and the 4 at Stuart Haas. You've got to look at, you know, all the Joe Gibbs cars. And then maybe the 22 of Joey Logano. To me, I think if you're going to look at the playoffs, my 4 at this juncture going in is Kyle Busch. I think you have to look at him as being the front runner. And I think there's 3 guys that are right there behind him in his mirror. And that's his teammate, Denny Hamlin, who I think this year has his best chance ever of winning a championship because of his crew chief, Chris Gabehart, how he has flipped it for Denny Hamlin and has kept him engaged the entire year. Whereas in the past, you know, his productivity was like a heart monitor. You know, he'd win the Daytona 500 and then he went like 4 races without scoring another top 5. And then he'd go a dip again. And, you know, remember Denny Hamlin went into the season finale at Homestead back in, I think, 2011, leading the points. Spun on his own and lost the championship.
I remember that. Yeah.
And so I think this is his best shot ever. I think Kevin Harvick is right there. And as is, I don't think you can ever count out Joey Logano.
That's to me, Logano's the one that I'm really curious about. I asked Penske that. I said, there's this maturity thing that happens with any athlete. Well, in life, we all hit that point eventually, but Logano now versus Logano 3 years ago, 2 years ago is not the same guy. He just comes off as so much more confident and controlled and composed when he's even talking to the media and even the way he drives. He just seems like he's in that pocket right now.
2 things about Logano that stand out to me. Number one, he is in his happy place. Everything in his world is going well. He's got a great wife, a great child. You know, home life is great. His work life is great. Not only is he running well, he's winning races, he's winning a championship. But to me, how he has carried himself and how he is able to poke fun at himself, like the commercial that you saw with he and his wife,
oh, it's great.
You know, doing the Kevin and Delana Harvick Shell deal. I mean, to me, being able to have fun like that tells you that he is very comfortable in his life and in his skin. And I think if you look at what he has done as a champion, is so impressive, probably one of the best champions that I have seen in decades. And what I mean by that is he has really thrown his arms around, and I've heard, you know, about what goes on in the driver council meetings and how most people will step up with possibly what is an agenda for them. Joey Logano steps up with what's an agenda for the betterment of the sport. And I don't know if you've seen back at Michigan during the rain delay, I had a chance to interview Joey Logano and show pictures of the Monster Energy Cup. And what he did, the trophy at that point still had not been to his house. When he got the trophy back, he started letting each crew member on the 22 team take it for a week. And they could do, just like the Stanley Cup tradition,
wow.
They could do with it whatever he wanted to do, that individual. And that, you know, I've seen, we had so many great pictures from, you know, people with their newborn kids sitting in the cup and taking Christmas pictures to, you know, having a barbecue and, you know, different things, taking it to, you know, a firehouse up in Mooresville you know, police station, you name it, and so many great pictures. And Kyle Zimmerman, who is Joey's PR person, is from Michigan, and he, as a matter of fact, had it Michigan weekend because he's from there. So he put it in his Jeep, and he drove it all the way to Michigan and took it to, you know, where he's from, and his family got to take pictures. But it's that type of engagement, which is why Joey's guys are so behind him and so in his corner. But I think it just shows what a leader he is. And, you know, and I'm glad that you think about Joey Logano. In many ways, he's an old soul. But you're like, man, he's really, he's a tweener. He's really in between the young guys and the old guys.
Yeah.
And I think it's the betterment of the sport that, you know, he is where he is at this point.
So we got the first three are Vegas, Richmond, and then Charlotte. That's the Roval race, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's your cutoff. So they're going to cut off at the Roval and then move on to the next round. I know I'm kind of old school, and I generally kind of like racing the way I like racing, but I freaking love the Roval. I love that race. I was laughing my ass off watching it last year. I love it.
Well, I think it really surprised a lot of people, just the excitement of the event, how it all transpired, how the challenge for the drivers, you know, it really was, you know, everything that the buildup that led to it, I felt like surpassed all the expectations going in.
And I agree.
I think it's a perfect place in the playoffs. I like how the playoffs are lining up.
Unless Kyle Larson is down by 1 point, then the whole field's going to get taken out.
Yeah.
Right. Kyle will take out everybody. Yep. It'll be a pace car and a kid on a bicycle.
Yep, exactly. So I just think I love the way that, you know, when they had a change in leadership, which really in some ways wasn't a change in leadership because Mr. France was always there, Mr. Jim France. But now that, you know, he's even more so out in the forefront, you know, so many great things have started happening for the sport. You know, starting last fall, you're seeing even more this year. And I love the direction that things are headed. And it just seems like there's a strong sense of confidence that, hey, you know, the sport is back digging. It's back digging forward, and it's on the climb. And I think when you watch the racing each week, you know, it just seems like as the season is worn on, it's gotten better. And I'm really excited that the playoffs are finally here.
I am too. I mean, it's obviously a long season. I know for you guys working it, it's massive. But to get there, and you're right. I've heard the saying. I've been saying it for years. You know, sometimes you don't need to rub the fur off a teddy bear. It just is a teddy bear. And right now, NASCAR is in this place, and advocates like you and like Dale Jr. I love when he constantly gets on there, and people go, a lot of empty seats in Indy. I'm like, if you've ever been to Indy, that's 250,000 people. I mean, it's a huge place to try to fill up. So even 100,000 people looks like nothing there, right? I mean,
well, and if you look at just, you know, that racetrack, that place, the Indianapolis 500 is IndyCar's biggest event.
Yeah.
And if you look at the crowds that they're and that event is coming back. You know, I used to love going there when you would have, you know, two weekends of qualifying. First weekend and second weekend, and the excitement that place had, and it had a special vibe. And then it started to go away, and they had the IRL and the car and all that, you know, mumbo jumbo fighting and everything else. But now that it, you know, they've got some great leadership there, and I'm a firm believer in that. You know, high tide raises all boats.
Yeah,
and I love seeing that. You know, IndyCar racing's coming back. I love seeing IMSA's coming back. I especially love the focus that people are putting on the grassroots. And, you know, Kevin Harvick was a big pusher in that 2 years ago. He started drumming, beating that drum. And I'm glad to see it starting to take off, that, you know, more focus is putting on there. And I love when, you know, you see what NBC does with their grassroots initiative. You know, they mentioned during the Michigan race weekend, Butler Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, I wish they would have thrown in about how, you know, Lori Halbison, who works at, you know, Kyle Busch Motorsports, was Mark Martin's PR person for many, many years. Her dad actually owned that track. Jerry Kelly, who's the car chief for Brad Keselowski, His dad used to race sprint cars there. His grandfather, Hank Lauer, many-time track champion there. And so there's so many different ways to tie in wherever we're racing with folks that are in the garage area because, you know, NASCAR is kind of a melting pot. You know, you've got folks from all over the country that have, you know, come to this small little region here in North Carolina to work on a sport that goes all over the country. And I wish that we could go. I know that, you know, they race north of the border up at Mossport with the trucks. But, man, I wish we could go back north with the Cup Series and Xfinity and, you know, so many great fans up there. I know they listen to your show.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, a lot of great things I think are going to be coming soon for racing in general. I just feel like everybody is starting to get traction.
Pardon the racing pun. You're absolutely right. But, of course, we missed the big story. The big story of the weekend is the fact that Dale Earnhardt Jr. tweeted out a Bob Seger lyric. Right? I mean, that's the lead. We buried the lead, Matt.
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. And
real quick,
an opportunity to start throwing out some lines as well and throwing out pictures and and everything else from my recent Seger shows. And
if y'all don't know, Matt Yocum is a huge Bob Seger fan, man. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. tweeted out, you remember Uncle Joe, he was the one afraid to cut the cake because the 19 car was running. They had a bunch of names on the hood and it said Secret Agent Fire Lake.
Yep.
And the fact that Jr. responded with a Seger lyric, I'm like, oh my God, I love you even more. That's fantastic, man.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. Yeah, the last Seger show I attended was here in Charlotte. And, I was getting ready to leave, and I saw, you know, Eric Jones. He was there with his family. Rick Corelli, the High Plains Drifter, his spotter, was there. And, a lot of Seger fans, you know, especially if you're from, the Mitten. You know, he's especially a special person to all of us. So,
hold on. Let me see if I find this real quick. I may have it. Hold on real quick. I thought I had it. I have the explanation of Seger and Fire Lake that Dale made the reference to. It was about taking chances.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Joey's the one who's afraid to bet the eights and aces. But anyway, all right. So I got to talk with you, Matt Yocum, you and I being big Seger fans. We got the press release that the final four dates for the Roll Me Away Tour for North America have been announced.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not end in Detroit.
See, to me, I just feel like, you know, we need to have at least one more show where he gets in, you know, his vintage car, no matter whether it's a Thunderbird or a Chevy.
He's got it. Well, he's got a muck. You know, he's got a 70. He's got a 70 Cobra Jet Mustang.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, that's his baby.
See, he needs to walk off the stage, walk down the steps, have the car sitting there, pull in, and then have that shot of him just pulling away, those Mustang taillights, you know, heading on out. To me, that's how it needs to end. You know, going there at Pine Knob, which I know that's no longer the official name.
Yeah.
But you still have that special feeling when you go there. But that's where it needs to happen.
I'm telling you, right, it won't be Pine Knob because we put up the sign and then we have to change it to the 34 Bob Seger Boulevard. Here's my dream. You ready? Because I've been thinking about this over the weekend because I know you and I were going to talk today. All right. One last show. We call it the famous final scene. For those of you who don't know, it's a Bob Seger song. It's a beautiful song. You do it at Ford Field here in Detroit.
Ooh.
Here's my lineup. You open up with Lynyrd Skynyrd. Jason Aldean, because Jason Aldean and Bob did that Crossroads show together, and Bob loves his country. Kid Rock, the Eagles, in honor of Glenn Frey, his, you know, the person that he mentored.
Oh, yeah.
And then have Seger headline it.
Wow.
And have Seger and the Eagles sing in famous final scene for his last song. Or you just have Bob come out with the piano and do it all on his own. And that's how it ends.
Man, that's tough, whether to see him do it solo just by himself, because I think it would be so poetic just to have that image of him, darkened stage, you know, somewhat of a spotlight on him.
Right.
Closing it out.
It works, doesn't it?
To me, that, you know, everybody talked about Led Zeppelin coming back for that final show over in Europe. And
at the O2.
I mean, that would be nothing compared to this. This would be huge.
And I don't know anything. I seriously don't. But I know that the way that when you read the press release, it doesn't say his last show in North America. It just says last show of the tour. Those things are written for a reason. I mean, you know what I mean? The way they're shaped. So, yeah, they're not done. I mean, it'll wrap up here in the Motor City. It has to.
Well, two things. Number one, you know, I every day I go out to my mailbox and I say a little prayer. I open it up and there's no package from Big Jim.
Oh,
there's
God,
no
the shirt.
State
I suck.
Seeger shirt. And I said, hey, you know, great looking shirt, cough, cough, XL. Unless, of course, it's a small XL, then it needs to be a double XL. But anyway, I digress. But, you know, every day I go out, I'm like, today's going to be the day.
Well, you're the one that knows Harvick.
You know, like if,
get Harvick on the show, like, and then I'll do it.
If you're a Lions fan, it's kind of like, you know what? I think this is going to be the year. Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, why would you do that to us? Yeah, don't do that.
The whole
okay.
Fourth quarter.
I know. I'll get.
Hey, I got to leave you with this.
Yes, sir.
Funny thing I saw on television. So there is this couple, married couple in Pennsylvania. Somebody at the bank had a miscue when they were making a deposit, and they put $120,000 into their checking account.
Yep.
So do you think A, they quickly return the money? Or do you think B, they went out and they bought a bunch of stuff?
Well, I would hope A, just being good citizens, they return the money. It's not theirs. They knew it wasn't theirs.
Yep. No, that's what I would have done too. And all of your listeners, you know, would have done the same thing.
Most.
No, that's not what happened. They went out and they bought a bunch of four wheelers and a race car.
Didn't they give like $15,000 to their friends?
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel if you're the one neighbor, Matt Yoakam, who didn't get any money from them?
Well, I would be sitting there on my front porch drinking my Verners and going, well, I'll toast to you as you're on your way to prison because now they've got felony charges against them.
All right. Well, there's some sort of symbolism in the way racing used to be with spending money we didn't have. But, man, it's going to be fun, dude. I love it. Thank you so much, Matt. I will get that shirt in the mail to you. We got your final four now. So at the end of the day, who wins it? If you had to pick an onion right now, who would it be?
I would say the 11 of Denny Hamlin.
Really?
I'm going out, at this point. I'm going out on the ledge and saying Denny Hamlin.
I'm going with your boy, with Kevin.
All right.
Just something about him, man. Yeah, he's got that silent predator kind of look to him, man.
Okay, we're gonna have a little bit of a wager here.
Okay.
And our favorite place where we had lunch last time.
Okay. Who's paying? We're betting lunch?
Yep, we're betting lunch.
Okay, and this time take a picture because no one believed we actually went to lunch together. So
I know. We finished lunch, and I was like driving down the road, and I texted you. I said, I think I was
damn
on my
it.
Way to Allen Park to visit one of my buddies from, I mean, single digits, Stevie Nahez. Nahez Recruiting over in Allen Park.
Okay.
Great guy. Does tremendous effort finding folks for work in the auto industry. Engineers, you name it. Awesome guy. But I was on my way to visit him next. And I was like, oh, my God. Big Jim and I forgot to take a picture.
We
no
never
one
did.
Can believe it.
Yeah, in the world of social media we live in, we didn't take a photo. It's crazy, man. All right.
If it doesn't end up on Twitter, did it really happen?
No. Mm-hmm. Well, the Browns wish it didn't. Anyway, at Matt Yoakam on Twitter, you mentioned that, of course, all your work. And are you done for the season with Kevin then doing your show?
We will do one season wrap-up show.
Okay.
You know, if you're a Kevin Harvick fan, you're hoping it's discussing winning the championship.
Yeah.
But regardless, we're going to do it in December, the week of the championship banquet. So it should be fun then. And as always, I'll be checking in with Big Jim's Garage and everybody on the show.
You the man.
You the man. Yeah.
Matt, you're the best. We'll talk soon. I'll get that shirt off to you, okay, bud?
Thanks, brother.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.